What's going on with NFTs? I mean, we're in a bull run, right? BTC is dominating, meme coins are going parabolic, everything is up only except NFTs. Weekly NFT volume remains super low, around 150, 200 million, and nowhere near previous highs of over a billion. Does this mean NFTs are dead? I mean, there's still tremendous potential for the future of NFTs across multiple industries and use cases. But if we're going to get there, we need NFT infrastructure to support that. I'm not talking about PFPs. While trading NFTs may be a total lost cause at this point, and let's be honest, your bags may never come back, the future of NFTs remains strong as ever. So today we're joined by Yana Burtman, Head of Strategy and Team Lead at Rari Foundation, to talk about the future of NFT infrastructure and innovation. In this compelling interview, we discuss the fascinating story of how Rarible created Rari DAO and decentralized the governance of Rarible Protocol, the mission of Rarible Foundation, and how they are fulfilling their purpose to enable the future of NFT infrastructure, and the recent launch of Rari Chain, an L3 built on top of Arbitrum Orbit with embedded royalties. GMGM, welcome to Milk Road Radio, the easiest path to get smarter about crypto. I'm Jay Bird, and I believe that NFT infrastructure is going to change the world. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I want to let you know that today and tomorrow are your last chance to get in on the discount for Milk Road Pro. This is a lifetime discount being offered only right now, so don't miss out on this. Milk Road Pro is your crypto analysis in your inbox every week that you need to be smart in your investments in crypto. So click the link in the show notes and grab that discount now before it's too late. You don't want to miss out. Without further ado, let's meet Yana and hear about Rari Foundation. GM, Yana, welcome to Milk Road Radio.
GMJ, thanks for having me.
Very, very excited to have you on the show today to talk all about NFT infrastructure and the future of NFTs. Maybe not getting the narrative right now. NFT market is down, and I think we've all learned that PFPs are not the only use case for NFTs, and NFT innovation is happening in the background, and I think we're going to hear a lot more about that coming out throughout this bull cycle. But before we get into all of that, let's start out by just talking about Rari Foundation. Rari Foundation's mission is to enable the future of NFT infrastructure. Can you help our listeners understand maybe the key players here? We have Rarible, we have Rari Foundation. What's the story? Take us back to sort of the creation or the origin story of Rari Foundation, why it was started, and what the mission is.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. So essentially, it all started with Rarible, not the Rari Foundation. The Rari Foundation came after. Rarible opened marketplace, and they were really there at the beginning of that first NFT bull run, right? And they saw the massive success of NFT market, that NFT summer, and they, from the very beginning, believed in the power of community. It was one of the few marketplaces that were not gated, where you didn't have to get approved as a creator. It was very open, very inclusive, like you can almost call it uncensored, right? And with that, like the creator and the community was always at heart of what they were doing. And very early on, they had an idea of launching a governance token called Rari, and with that, giving power to the community to make key decisions around the Rarible ecosystem. It was a bit of a question mark of what that exactly will end up looking like. And I think there was a little bit of process of getting to what that decentralization will look like. So it wasn't necessarily the whole marketplace will get decentralized and the community will vote on who gets to drop on Rarible and so on. That necessarily wasn't the path. The path was there is a tech layer that started emerging as the marketplace was becoming more and more mature. Almost you can call it the back end of the marketplace was becoming more and more robust, and it became its own standalone thing at the end. And that's the Rarible protocol. That's essentially the order book, the SDK, and the indexer that it's used to power the marketplace that sits on top of it. And then with that, it became a standalone product as well, because now, yes, the Rarible NFT marketplace sits on top of this protocol, utilizes the protocol, and it's built, but so can other So it can be other apps. It can be clients of Rarible that are asking Rarible to build custom marketplace. We've seen that happen with like Animoca, Barbie, McFarlane Toys. Like there's multiple quite prominent Web2 marketplaces that have been built with the Rarible protocol. But it can also power different use cases like wallet integrations, data analytics tools, fun things like a project called Bot Friends that was awarded the grant early on from the foundation or from the Rari DAO. Was essentially, it alerts you around the NFT movements for your community. So it can be like, you know, Budget Penguins, for example, sale was made and you get notification. So multiple apps can be built with that. And really the vision there was, yes, you can be building marketplaces, but what else can you build out there with the protocol? That was why the DAO was formed, to reap the benefits from the protocol adoption, but also to help drive that ecosystem growth and drive that innovation and power those innovative use cases. So the foundation is the legal entity that works on behalf of the DAO, right? Not every DAO has necessarily a foundation, but most of them actually started to adopt this kind of structure because you need somebody with assigning power, somebody that can like enter in agreements and that will be paying vendors. And it just like makes the whole operation a little bit more executable in a way. So we often are in a position that we are given the mandate by the DAO to run certain projects, to execute certain projects. So think about us as like the administrators / executors and facilitators essentially of the DAO. But the DAO is like what gives us the mandate and what gives us the permission to do certain type of things. And that also finances these things, right? So when the Rari token was created, a significant portion of that token was essentially given to the treasury of the DAO. So if you hold Rari token, and you lock it. So we actually have a model called vRari. So you lock your token. That lock token can be used for governance. That means that you can vote either yourself directly, or you can delegate your voting power to a delegate that represents your interests in voting for with the DAO. And you can vote on proposals around governance, around treasury allocation. So that's usually anything to do with finance, right? Like giving out grants, financing different projects, financing the foundation, remunerating delegates, right? Like you can become creative with the way you spend the treasury in the community, rewarding creators and stuff like that, and creating different kind of incentive structures. But you can also have proposals that are a little bit more technical. So you can, you know, help build out the capabilities of the protocol and so on. So that was how the DAO was created. The mission was to power these innovative NFT use cases and do that through providing this decentralized NFT infrastructure, right? And why decentralized is important in this case is because then you don't have a single actor that changes the game on you, that flips the card, right? That decides from one day to another that the business case no longer applies, or they get acquired and there's new management and, you know, everything is different now. So if we want projects to have confidence and faith in the tech that they've built with to be stable, decentralization and this like critical neutrality, that idea actually gives you a much better guarantee that what you have been building with is here to stay. So that's essentially why decentralization matters for the protocol and why it matters for, you know, others as well.
Yeah, and it makes me think of, sorry, I was going to jump in here because you're speaking around it, but I'm going to say it directly. This happened all when OpenSea was making just like corporate decisions to change their marketplace and the way that they handled royalties. Yep. And we all remember, we've talked about this on the podcast at length. We actually had Alex, one of the co-founders from Rarible, on our podcast probably a year ago when this was all going down, to talk about this problem of should royalties be enforced, should they not? Blur came out. I mean, I don't need to explain that again. I think we've talked about it enough. But yeah, Rarible didn't want to be in the position of holding the power to make those types of decisions. They believed that the community should be empowered to make those decisions, and they believed in the stability of a protocol that was not in their hands, where they could overnight say, yeah, we're going to put royalties fees on, we're going to turn them off, and we're just going to make these decisions without considering our community. And so I don't think enough is actually talked about in this story of how Rarible approached this and how they have gotten to this point where they have decentralized. decentralizing isn't easy, right? There's a lot of steps that need to happen here and a lot of big decisions and a lot of bets that are made. And so by launching Rari Foundation, well, launching Rari DAO, by decentralizing with the token, launching Rari DAO, they enabled the community to really take ownership of a protocol that is vital to not just creators, but to businesses that are building on top of that protocol. They need to understand how that's going to be governed and used moving forward.
Yeah, and also decentralization can be costly, especially in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And there are significant legal fees that go into setting up all the structures around foundations, right? You have technical costs for setting up your governance structures, making sure that you have all the proper contracts and using the right kind of platforms, right? You give up a significant portion of your token for the treasury. There is a lot of investment. So you have to believe that the case for decentralizing your project actually is a strong one, right? And with that, you go down this path. It's not always the most straightforward or the most easy path to choose, but it does have this benefit of providing stable or more stable platform for the ecosystem that you are hoping to grow with your product, right? And the example that you are mentioning with OpenSea was one of the key catalysts for us as the foundation and the DAO to start discussing internally with the community that we should be launching our own chain, essentially. The reasoning was, if we are here to drive innovation and if we are here to be powering that innovation through decentralized NFT tooling, part of that NFT tooling, apart from the Rarible protocol, can be also its own platform, an proprietary chain, right? The chain is not exclusive just to the protocol, right? But it is something that can provide a base where NFTs can flourish. And that particular use case of the creative NFTs, right? And the NFTs that actually rely on royalties for their longevity and for their sustainability, that piece is not negotiable and it's not optional and it's not revocable by a single player. And that's why we decided to launch the Rari chain with royalties embedded on the node level. In very simple terms, that means that the sequencer only lets transactions pass if they respect royalties. And if you are trying to not respect royalties, the sequencer will not let that transaction pass. It will not validate. So that is essentially like the gist of it. So if you are building on top of Rari chain as an app, if you one day decide that you will no longer enforce royalties, that doesn't matter because the chain itself, the design of the chain itself enforces royalties. You can talk about like why all these marketplaces started slashing, right? I think like business-wise, we can all understand that them as private businesses found themselves in the NFT crypto winter with low trading volumes. They tried to incentivize trading activity. Getting rid of royalties was a move that they decided to adopt and it made business sense for them, right? But that's where it's actually this alternative model of having something that is DAO governed. It's a good addition to what is available to builders and what is available to collectors and creators in the market to have that as an option for if they want something that is not necessarily just profit driven, right? Everybody, of course, needs profits. It's sustainable. Like you can't just be investing in your product all the time. But I think it's a very different pressure to be making continuous profit for a single company versus for a DAO.
Okay, so let's just explain and make sure everybody understands all these different entities we're talking about here or products we're talking about because there's quite a few. So we've got Rarible, which is a private company that manages their marketplace. Rarible created Rarible Protocol. That's a decentralized protocol that is governed by Rari DAO, then decided, hey, it's very difficult to make decisions as a DAO when you're fully decentralized. We need a organization that can make decisions for us and also can pay vendors and do more financial and legal transactions. So they started Rari Foundation. You're sort of, feel free to jump in if you want to correct me on that.
The decision part is the difference, right? So the DAO still makes the key decisions, but then they give us the mandate to execute. So like we have our operational autonomy to a degree, but it's still under the mandate of the DAO. So the decisions are still made in a decentralized fashion, right? Mm-hmm. But think about us as somebody that then enables those decisions to actually take form in the real world.
Right, right. Makes total sense. And then Rari Foundation / Rari DAO created Rari Chain and launched Rari Chain, which is what you've just mentioned here, is this launched this chain in January. So it's only a few months old, only, what, 3 months old now.
Yeah.
And that chain has a focus on embedded royalties. And it's also an L3, and we'll talk in a minute about what an L3 is. I just want to talk a little bit more about this embedded royalties, because as far as I know, you're the only chain that has embedded royalties.
As far as I know, that's the case, at least embedded royalties on the node level. I think, you know, there are experiments with smart contracts layer and protocol layers, but like the actual like node level, which is the deepest level of integration, to my knowledge, we are the first and possibly the only ones to date. And I think that was like the novel aspect of the chain. And that's, you know, what was really important for us. We wanted to make it in a way that there's as little negotiation around this as possible. The only way to change that mechanism is if the DAO actually votes on that. And, you know, they just decide to change the overall like design of the chain, which is quite unlikely. So yeah, it's pretty awesome. And I think, you know, also like launching something that just gets handed over to the DAO to make decisions is amazing as well. With that said, I think like the first step is more, you know, handing over the revenue, and then over time you like transfer the ownership of all the contracts, but you don't necessarily like start with, hey, here's the whole package, there you go, right? Like every decentralization is kind of happening in stages, mm-hmm. and then its own like progress path. It's pretty amazing, because then it also is a wonderful experience for the community and for the delegates. It doesn't happen often that you are part of a DAO that is just taking on your responsibilities like that, that is, you know, launching something new, that is making true innovation in the space. So it's also very exciting for our delegates and for our community to be part of this journey.
For sure, for sure. Let's talk a little bit about NFT innovation and how embedded royalties fit into that. And let me just sort of give you my perspective. I'll be honest, I struggle with royalties. I'll tell you why I haven't made up my mind. I think royalties make a lot of sense in certain use cases. I think they make a lot of sense in the use case of an independent artist. An independent artist certainly deserves to get royalties on any future transaction related to their art, whether that be a musician or whether that be a visual artist, any sort of artist that is creating any, you know, I'll actually extend that beyond artists, any creator, right? The entire internet relies upon, all of our social media relies upon all of these creators. And right now, all those creators make, you know, they make video content on TikTok, image content, all this content we're making. And those creators, they don't get much in form of monetary recognition for their creation, right? Who gets that? Facebook gets that, or Meta gets that. The large Web2 organizations that actually own all these creations that we're making, they own that, and then they monetize it through ads. And so I can get behind all those creators deserving all of the royalties. Where I struggle with NFT royalties, and maybe this is more of a conversation about the future of NFTs and how broad NFTs are and how they have so many use cases, is in the case of a brand launching an NFT, I struggle more to understand about why royalties matter so much if Nike is doing some sort of on-chain program. Do they deserve to have royalties on secondary sales? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't necessarily get behind that as much. So anyways, needless to say, I'm curious to get your take on both royalties, but also maybe more so the where you see NFT innovation right now and in the future.
Yeah, awesome. I think you're spot on, right? Like, royalties might be applicable to one project, but not to another. One creator, not necessarily to another, right? Like, it depends what is the intended use of that NFT, right? And who is by. I don't think you need royalties on meme coins. Or like memes, right? Like these PFP collections, not necessarily, but you do need royalties on like pieces made by legit Web3 artists, right? Mm-hmm. That actually turn their work over to the community, and that's how they make a living, right? Because then changing rules on those after, you know, they've put a lot of work into launching a collection, and suddenly they don't reap the royalties on that collection, you know, a year down the line, actually changes the math with which they approach their livelihood in general quite significantly, right? So like for them, it's really important. Taking the example of a Nike, I could see a use case for royalties if the NFT is some sort of like donation type of NFT, right? And you can trade it. And then the royalty piece is something that will go into some sort of fund, right? It's a proceed with some sort of use for it, right? Rather than just like a corporate revenue, right? However, right, if you're a company and you're selling your IP, if you're doing Disney Cinderella NFTs, Disney probably still wants to continue having royalties on the secondary sales, right? Because it is still their IP that gets sold. So I think like the IP use case is also really important there, right? Same thing in the music industry. Like with every resale, you should still be able to reap that benefit. But we're still like talking here about more of that like creative and creator side of NFTs. And that's really just like one piece of the story, right? And there are so many more applications for NFTs that already started to emerge or that will emerge in the future, right? Like NFTs are big in gaming. NFTs are becoming important in SocialFi. NFTs, you know, and real world assets is something that people are trying to crack everywhere, right? Of course, like regulations and all of these things are a little bit more applicable in that area. And that's a more of a slower moving target. But it is a big one. And once that gets cracked, it will be a really important one as well. The example of Nike, right? That's like the brand loyalty program. So that has been going for some time. Not all of them have continued, right? Starbucks have just shut down. But that's fine, right? Like, I think it's the appetite for learning and seeing what works, what doesn't work, right? And that's kind of where we are in Web3 in general. And that's where we'll be with NFTs for some time as well. Like, we need to see, does the application of the technology on solving this kind of problem actually make it better? Or did it actually become not such a strong value prop, right? Or is it not strong enough of a solution? So I think like we need to be like going through this. But then NFTs are also interesting from the financial perspective, right? Like you had that ERC 404 making headlines a few weeks or maybe a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot that can be done, right? Like I'm a homeowner. I'm a president of our mini condo association, right? I'm like, just turn that into a DAO and like make everything NFT powered, you know?
Yeah.
Like you can also think about NFTs in the sphere of governance, right? It doesn't have to be just tokens and how many of those tokens you own. It can be a tiered thing based on your NFT ownership, right? Based on like your accomplishments or contributions. So there are different ways that you can just utilize NFTs either as the engine that fuels some sort of, you know, Web3 operation or as its own like product as well. Or it can be just like a backbone for your real world or Web2 interactions. And you don't even have to know there's an NFT on the back end of it. So there's a lot that can be done and a lot can be utilized. So I think, you know, maybe when people are talking about when NFT's back, it's going to look very different, right? It's not going to be this like roll around with those like NFT collections soaring to high rises. For me, NFTs will be back when we see more of that widespread adoption of the technology across many different use cases. That, for me, is when NFTs are truly back.
Yeah, you bring up a great point. And I think what we're seeing, right, what we saw in the last bull run was a hype cycle around opportunities for a lot of people to make a lot of money in a, quite frankly, an easy way. Not to judge PFP collections, but it's not hard to create a PFP collection using AI or some tool you can create. Look, there's lots of great PFP collections out there, but those aren't businesses. And what we're seeing is the same thing happening right now with meme coins, right? Very easy to launch a meme coin. We're seeing a lot of different projects come out of nowhere, launch a meme coin, and try to get a whole bunch of people around a hype cycle to get in on that. And I think, as you said, what's going to happen next with NFTs is more innovative use cases that really you don't necessarily know it's an NFT, whether you're, you know, purchasing a piece of real estate and in the back end, it's an NFT, but you don't know that you're just purchasing a piece of real estate. That's just your typical process that you go through. So what we're going to see is different than what we saw before. And that's exciting. What I want to know is, I don't know if this is more from a Rari chain perspective or from a Rari DAO perspective, what are the projects that you're supporting now or that are building on Rari chain that you're excited about that you can tell us about?
It's very early days. So as you mentioned, the Rari chain launched only 2 months ago. So we are now actually deploying a grants program. And as part of that grants program, We have received some applications, but we haven't necessarily allocated to the selected projects their grants portion just yet. I haven't seen in the applications like a true like breakthrough like innovation. I think it's still tipping around what we know already, but it's trying to do like a different angle. I think there's NFT/loans kind of, you know, applications. I think the intersection of DeFi NFTs is maybe what is now getting most of the mind share. But yeah, I would love to see more of those like truly pioneering. I think, you know, on-chain storage is something that can really like benefit from a little bit more innovation as well. And I think that platforms like the Rari chain are places to do it, right? Because you are trying to look for very cost-effective environment, right? Mm-hmm. And the L3 is like more cost-effective than L2, which is more cost-effective than L1, right? So like you get the benefit of scale. And that was already the case before the Ethereum upgrade, right? And Blobs. Now with Blobs, like once that's deployed on Arbitrum, we will get benefit of that as well as an L3 on top of Arbitrum. So we will get even that much more cheap, right? Like you can argue that like now already the L2s are so cheap that it doesn't really matter. But like when you're thinking about true scale, every cent matters, right? Or every fraction of the cent like piles up. So you can also think about innovation. Like I know I started talking about this from like a storage perspective, right? But you can also think about it from a perspective of more complex apps, right? Because before apps were really limited by, oh, this is like, you know, a very complicated series of commands, too many transactions, it will make it prohibitively costly. But that's no longer the case if gas is really cheap, right? Then you can start building different kind of apps with different kind of logic to them where the gas doesn't become a hindrance anymore, right? So I think it will still take a little bit of time for like projects to really like jump on that wagon, but would really love to see more of that because like there's so much potential in building Web3 experiences that are akin to Web2 experiences that we are used to, but we're just like not there yet. But like once we get there, it's going to be really like a no-brainer for people to be using and adopting Web3 en masse, right?
I love it. I believe it. I hope the rest of the world believes that as well. Let's talk about, you bring up L3. So Rari Chain is an L3 chain. I'm sure lots of people have heard the term L3, but it's not really, I don't even think it's mainstream within like crypto yet, that term. And most of us aren't even using L3s yet. Let's talk a little bit about why you launched Rari Chain as an L3, why you picked to build on top of an Arbitrum Orbit, which is an L2. Let's walk us through that decision and what are the benefits of it being an L3?
Why did we decide to launch as an L3 is because, first of all, it became freshly available to projects. So when we started talking about L3, Orbit just went into production. So Orbit being like the L3 solution for Arbitrum ecosystem. And Arbitrum was like just one of very few ecosystems that even offering L3s, right? So most other ecosystems would just offer you to like use their stack to be building another L2.
Like Optimism offer their stack to build like Basechain or Zora were built on OP stack, exactly. For example.
And you were like in the pre-blob era. So L2 gas is not expensive, but it's also not super duper cheap. Mm-hmm. But everything that you're doing on the L2 settles directly on L1. So your costs for running the chain are actually quite significant. It can be easily tens of thousands of dollars per month. And then depending on the stack that you are building with, some of them are depositing empty blocks as well. So you can be just having an empty chain that nobody's using and you're still paying all these L1 fees because you were just, you know, depositing empty blocks. Arbitrum doesn't do that, right? Arbitrum doesn't deposit empty blocks. So that's already like one saving. Then you go into the L3 world and suddenly your L3 gets settled on L2 and then it gets settled on L1. So your L1 settlement costs already get cut by that mechanism. And then on top of that, there's also an option to launch in any trust mode. So there's like an alternative data availability committee. I'm not going to get too specific here. But like the headline there is that's even more cheap, or it's even like more cost effective to be using that. So once you combine all of these different things and your ambition isn't to build a chain that you will then spin up additional L3s on top of, right? Mm-hmm. If that's not your ambition, L3 is a very adequate solution that is actually highly cost effective for you to run it. And, you know, as a reminder, we launched this as a DAO, right? So not VC funded, bootstrapped. So you definitely want to be cautious with the finances that you're deploying. But then it's also very cost effective for your users because the L3 gas fees are so much cheaper. Now, there's a hurdle of like bringing your finances over. You have to bridge them, and bridging does incur fees. But there is an investment to be entering in that ecosystem. But once you're there, it is so much significantly cheaper, right? And then bridging, it's not 100% there yet, but it will get there fairly soon. So like bridging takes time, right? And it takes gas. And I think, you know, there's, if you're working with the native bridges, you need to bridge from L1 to Arbitrum, from Arbitrum to Rari Chain, and the same thing on the way out. That's a native bridge experience. Arbitrum is working on a bridge where you just bridge directly from L1 to L3 or L3 to L1. I'm not sure what's the timing on that right now, but like that will simplify the bridging natively very much so. But then you have a lot of third-party bridge providers that A, make the bridging much quicker, but B, you probably need to pay some sort of fee, right? So the native bridge is probably the most cost-effective option, but you need to wait a little bit longer, especially on the way out. But what is really interesting as well is Ethereum might not be the number one ecosystem that people are bridging from in the future, right? They might be bridging. There might be enough of user base bridging just from Arbitrum. And then that like L1 to L3 problem doesn't exist anymore, right?
True.
Or they're just bridging from other L2s out there.
Yeah.
So I mean, like this whole like interoperability between different chains becomes more and more relevant because just like we launched Rari Chain, you will talk to projects out there. So many of them are launching their own chains, right?
Yeah.
And so that possibility for users to be seamlessly moving in this multi-chain environment will be more and more important. So I think you will see bridges and embrace that and be like much better than they are now. Check out solutions, payment solutions, but also apps. Like even if you think about something like Rarible, the marketplace, right? Like I think you just need to start embracing this future where you will use funds from any chain to be paying for NFTs from any chain.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's so true. We had one of the founders of Wormhole Foundation on the show last week, and we talked all about interoperability and how they are building protocols to solve this bridging problem. We've talked to Chainlink in the past and had them on the show and talked about their interoperability solution. So there is a lot of different people working on solving the bridging solution. I think the thing that you said that is so true, we are going to live in a multi-chain world for sure. Multi-chain in terms of multi-L1s. I don't think we're going to have, you know, thousands of L1s. I think there will be a few core L1s, but we will have multi-L1s. And then we're obviously going to have a lot of L2s and L3s. We're probably going to get to the point where we have millions of those because there's a lot of benefit to owning your own chain if you're a large enterprise or if you're a DAO. And so we're going to see that a lot. And I think the bridging problem is not your problem, basically. It's unfortunate right now for you. It certainly would make it difficult to attract people to Rari Chain, either as builders or as users. Now you face that challenge of, yeah, okay, come over, but yeah, you're going to have to go through all these hurdles. That's tough. But I think you're probably betting on the future when that is not as much of a hurdle and that'll be solved.
And I think like the early adopters like experience those growing pains with us to a degree, right? So I think like, you know, they need to brace themselves for it. But you mentioned like even people in Web3 often have not necessarily heard so much about L3s, right? So I think there's an educational component of this is how you on-ramp and off-ramp from an L3. Right. And this is how it relates to all, like, I think once that is kind of clarified, then it becomes very much the same logic as, oh, it's the same as like an additional L2. Right.
Mm-hmm. And this is also why, you know, it's so funny because we all talk about the next billion users on chain. Everybody in Web3 loves to talk about, you know, what's going to be, you know, when are we going to hit a billion users? When's the big game going to come out? We're all waiting for gaming to like have its moment. Still hasn't happened yet. Obviously relies heavily on NFT infrastructure. Who knows where that's going to come from? But what we do know is, are we really ready for that scale yet? Yeah, we're getting there. We have incredible innovation happening at the tech level. But let's be real. Coming into our space right now is UX nightmare. It's very difficult. If you're not a technical person, good luck. Like, yeah, there's embedded wallets and those are improving and that is making a big difference. We still have a ways to go before we're ready for that, the next billion.
100%. I'm somebody who comes from like a world where UX is important. So I was in the creative industries, but I was also in marketing. And honestly, sometimes I'm just like, why? Like, I'm using those web free applications. I'm like, why? What were you thinking? Right. So just like having great UX designers, priceless. You know, I hope every project takes UX very seriously. It's so important, right? It's one thing that everything works on the smart contract level, but then how do you translate it into UI? It's a very different story. And just like helping users do as few clicks as possible is just like such a simple thing, but it's actually like kind of hard to execute on well. So yeah, UX is super important.
Let's talk a little bit about some exciting programs that are happening over at Rari Foundation. You've got Rari Rewards for Rari Chain, and then you've mentioned a few times your grants program. Tell us about those and how people can get involved.
Awesome. So I can start from the grants program, right? So that's essentially a big part of what we do at the foundation. We are here to work with the DAO and use the funds of the DAO to drive that ecosystem growth. And there are two key products. There's the Rarible protocol, which is that order book indexer SDK, and it's Rari Chain that we've just been talking about. So we're just kind of like combining the two as our first wave of grants program. We are offering projects that built with the protocol a grants allocation. And then if you decide to deploy that on Rari Chain, you unlock a grant matching, right? So it's essentially like matching ecosystem fund where we just happen to be part of both ends of the equation. But what we have also cooked up is joint grants programs with other ecosystems down the line for the protocol, right? So those are to be announced later in the year, but roughly on a quarterly cadence, you will be able to apply for grants building on top of the Rarible protocol in certain ecosystem. And chapter number one is Rari Chain, obviously. There will be a separate grants program for Rari Chain specifically, but it just hasn't been formalized yet. So for now, it's just this protocols plus Rari Chain one. The Rari Rewards, on the other hand, is not necessarily something for builders, it's for the collectors. There was a version of Rari Rewards deployed in the past. It is an initiative that was proposed by the DAO and voted in by the DAO that allocated a certain portion of the treasury funds to users to collect as rewards based on their bidding and listing activities. And that was to promote marketplaces built with the protocol. So that was the original idea. Now that the Rari chain is here, there is a portion of this budget used for Rarible, the marketplace. So not necessarily a community marketplace, but the mother marketplace. And using those Rari rewards to incentivize trading on Rari NFTs. And with that, on particular collections that we have worked on with notable creators to come and drop on Rari chain. So you can go and like study the program and specific parameters, but essentially the lower the floor for your listing and the higher the floor for your bids, the more points you accumulate in a day. And then at the end of the day, those points get converted to Rari tokens. And every day have its own budget. So depending on the activity on that day, one day you can get like X percentage of that pool, the other day, different percentage. So every day is a little bit different. You will have your leaderboard. So you kind of like see everything that is happening in real time. So that's like pretty fun way, right, of collecting your Rari. And the creators, I think, you know, we are looking at four different creators to be dropping collections. Some of them are already confirmed. Like one of the notable ones is like Gabe Weiss. So he will be the first creator, which we're really excited about. And so for amount of time, starting April 10th. I'm not sure if his drop is exactly on April 10th, but that's when we are rolling out the rewards. People will be able to not only like purchase the NFT from a collection of these notable artists, but also, you know, get benefits as they're trading collections in the upcoming 90 days. That's how long the campaign is. So that's a really like nice way to get into the Rari chain NFTs if you haven't done that in the launch phase, because in the launch phase we had this really fun campaign called 10 by Rari, where each day for 10 days different artists would drop an open edition. that created a lot of, you know, excitement. The first creator that dropped her open edition on RariChain. And all these were 24-hour drops, by the way. And I think she priced hers at 0.0088 ETH, something like really nominal, like $20 essentially. But almost 14,000 people showed up to mint. So she actually walked away with 177 ETH of earnings in 24 hours. So that was like the best launch we could have imagined, right? So we're like really excited to see like what will happen now with these collections and the more notable artists actually like dropping on the chain. So very excited to see, you know, that generating some new excitement.
Yeah, and it points programs are one of the big narratives and metas in the space right now. You know, and we went from everybody was focused on, you know, getting farming airdrops to everybody was focused on trying to get as many points as possible. And it makes sense. Like, you come from the Web2 marketing world, right? It's marketing 101, right? You have to give incentives and give rewards to your users and give them a reason to come to your store or your product and to engage. Yep. And points programs are very effective at that. And so it's great that you guys are launching this new program. We'll put a link in our show notes. As you said, that starts April 10th. So everybody watch out for that. Get involved. Get your Rari points so you can earn your Rari token. And Rari token, on that note, I'll say it. You don't have to say it, but Rari token's been doing very well. A lot of tokens have been doing well over the past 3 months, but I know Rari token has gone up, I believe, 3x or something like that. I was watching it. I don't personally own any of it, but I was watching it closely. I thought about buying some of it back maybe 3 months ago. Now I wish I did. But anyways, things are going well on that front too. So great to see the grants program and to see Rari rewards as well. Before we wrap up, I want to give you a chance to tell people where they can follow you or where they can follow Rari Foundation or Rari Chain. There's been so many different entities that we've talked about here today.
There's a lot of Twitter accounts to add to your follow list if you don't follow us already. So the foundation is at Rari Foundation. Our website is rari.foundation. The chain is at Rari Chain. So we try to keep things simple. And the website is rarichain.org. My personal Twitter handle is at Yanau, which is, I need to spell it for people, Y-A-N-N-A-U. Yeah, I think these are like some of the key accounts. You can also follow the Rarible Protocol at Rarible Protocol or check out their website on rarible.org. So I think like these are the key places to look at. We have also launched our Farcaster as Rari Foundation. So fun content is coming from our Farcaster account as well. And we have recently started doing in-wallet messaging with Coinbase as well. So you can subscribe to our channel in Coinbase Wallet.
Amazing. Oh, I love seeing wallet-to-wallet messaging starting and happening. I think that's, I mean, there's another use case that will be huge in the future, but we're just scratching the surface of that one. Okay, awesome. We'll put all those links in the show notes as well. If you weren't sure how Yana spelled her Twitter or anything like that, we'll make sure we put it in the show notes so you can get that. Before we wrap, we love to ask a couple of just fun questions. These do not have to be crypto answers, but they could be if you'd like. First up, what is a must-read book that you find yourself recommending?
Crypto or in general?
Could be either. Crypto, usually in general, is usually the way most people go.
So there was a book that I read at this point, maybe like 7 years ago. It was called Imagine Forward by Beth. What's her surname? She was like one of like big executives, but it's like Imagine Forward, Beth something. She was one of the big executives, women. And then she like abandoned her corporate career. She like became a professional author. But what the book essentially is about is how you drive innovation. And big unlock in that book was like at the very beginning, which was about like giving yourself permission to do things differently, giving yourself permission to fail, giving yourself permission to be like, you know, ambitious and do something new. And that really like struck a chord with me. And it's so interesting because when I talk to people and, you know, since then I've like managed bigger and bigger teams, like run bigger and bigger projects. In my previous career, I usually did have like big clients, important budgets and so on. So with that comes a lot of like working with different people and coaching. And every time I use that give yourself permission to do something every single time, it actually like struck a chord with that person as well. And it always unlocked like a new phase for them professionally, personally, and so on. So I think like that's a book that I would probably recommend to people, like especially if they're around like design thinking, innovation, and stuff like that. Imagine Forward. I'll need to look up her surname. I forgot that.
That's okay. That's okay. Sounds like a great book. Okay, next question. One thing you've bought recently for under $100 that brings you joy?
I'm terrible at online shopping. I like see an Instagram ad, and if it's under $100, I'm like, let's just buy that. So I have like two small kids now. So like buying them outfits is like the cutest thing ever. So I do that all the time. But yeah, one of them is growling because they're sitting on my lap right now. So like doing like outfits for toddlers is just like, it's almost like an addiction.
I can relate.
Yeah, really like Instagram friendly, like, you know, Instagram ads, they like get me every time.
Totally.
So yeah, so that brings me a lot of joy.
That's good. I feel the same way. Okay, last question. If you had a billboard that 1 billion people were going to see, what would you write on it?
I love that. I love that question. I'm a little bit professionally warped, so I'm like, my mind immediately goes into like, something around the rabbi chain. But
totally.
I think I should probably, if it's 1 billion people, I think I should probably write something like with a humanity message. Maybe something like eat less meat, or really, please really do recycle, you know, or not like trash in the oceans. Like, we really need it. Something like that.
Please recycle. That's hilarious. Nobody's ever said that. It's not often that people say new things. I will say we've done hundreds of podcasts and often you get a lot of repeat answers to that question, but nobody has ever said, please recycle.
It's just like, we talked about it in the prep, right? Like, I'm not from the US, but I live in the US.
Yeah.
And even like after so many years of living here, I just still can't get over the amount of trash people produce in this country. So yeah, recycling is important.
So true. Yana, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you to you. Thank you to the whole team over at Rary Foundation and all the various entities that we discussed today. Excited to continue to watch and see you enable the future of NFTs and NFT infrastructure.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure having this conversation. Looking forward to seeing more of your episodes coming out.
Awesome. Thanks so much for listening, and everybody, have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Milk Road Radio, the easiest path to get smarter about crypto. If you like this episode, share it and hit subscribe or follow so you don't miss out on the next one. There's also a link in the description to our free 5-minute daily newsletter where we simplify crypto for you while making you laugh. And if you're willing to step up your crypto investing game, then we'll leave a link to Milk Road Pro as well, your number one resource to help you invest successfully in crypto. One final note, this podcast is for educational purposes only, and nothing we say is financial advice. Crypto is risky, so you should never invest more than you're willing to lose. Thank you, friends, and we'll see you in the next one.